All right. Good morning, everybody. I'll call it the regular scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this beautiful Tuesday, April 24th, 2018, and ask if everybody please join the Board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Well, I got my first evening run outside in of the year, so I was excited about that and glad to be outside. Hopefully everybody got to enjoy the weather yesterday, and I hope the rest of this week. First item, as always, on our agenda is public comment number one. This opportunity is for members of the public to address topics not on today's agenda. And as we get to the end of public comment number one, we got a special presentation to make since it didn't make our agenda in the switch over to our new website. Anybody wishing to comment on anything? Chuck, how you doing? Okay, special presentation. So for the last two decades, we've had a gentleman who has kept a 100-year-old piece of infrastructure piece by piece functioning for Story County, and literally knows where the lines are buried and how to deal with our farmers in dealing with our drainage districts. And he's decided that it's time to go farm and live life and have fun. It coincides with, we're coming up on the 2-year anniversary of the passing of our dear friend Paul, Dave's brother, but it is such a unique opportunity, Dave, for us to say thank you to you for your years of service with Story County, and we just absolutely wish you the best as you move on to the rest of your life. So we got a little plaque here, and it says, David John Toot, in appreciation of 19 years of leadership, dedication, and service to the citizens of Story County, and we just appreciate it so much. Alright, let's see. Everybody in? We're going to take a picture right here.
Okay. Hey, thank you.
You hold that. All right. Step this way.
Okay.
Alright, good?
Good. I'm going to take a couple. Okay. Count to three. One, two, three.
Good. Thank you. Alright. Dave, thanks, man.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yep.
Hey Dave, grab this on your way out. Just stick that in.
You guys are welcome to stay.
Don't feel like you have to.
I would say before we move.
That's an offer.
In Dave's behalf, in the absence of Paul here and my time on the board, I would tell you that people he and I both know have grown up around. If Dave Toot looked at it, Dave Toot said it, that ended it.
Oh, there's a lot of farmers that they swear by the gospel of Dave Toot when it comes to grain. No question about it. And Dave and I were talking before the meeting. Would have been wonderful if your little brother could have been the one here to give you that. And you know, we all miss Paul every day. All right, moving on to our heart of our meeting, discussion and consideration of the remodeling plans for 124 South Hazel, which is currently the Hazel Group home that have entered into an agreement with Mary Greeley Medical Center and our mental health region to repurpose that building, still under ownership of the county, for crisis stabilization when it comes to mental health. I'm going to ask Jeff and Joby to come up and Carla. And who else here to talk about this? Christy, come on up as well.
Good morning.
Let's pull some chairs up there, and let's just talk this through. Jeff, so appreciative of you digging in and figuring out what needs to happen. This has been a really interesting process to get to this point. And so give us the overview to start.
All right. Yes, thank you. We appreciate the opportunity. And, we've been meeting with Christy and her group from Mary Greeley and Joby and the facilities people here from the county for the past couple months, probably going through their program of what they need to make changes to the house in order to get it ready for their program. So we've presented the kind of plans that, as we consider right now, are really pretty well finalized and ready to go out to bid as long as we get approval. And then a preliminary budget based on architects and engineers take off of the work to be done. I think it pretty well follows the scope that was determined in their original RFP document. We're basically replacing a lot of ligature, anti-ligature type equipment in the facility, grab bars, door handles, things like that throughout to make the house safe for the residents that we'll have. Some general upgrades to their nurse's station and their kind of their control point of the house to bring that up to their needs. Just some general electrical and mechanical upgrades. The one major component is a backup generator for the facility, so we're providing full backup power to the house so it can function in an outage. That's a major component of the budget. And then I guess we're eliminating or creating kind of a smoker's hut outside of the space so that they can get people out of the house that want to smoke. Those are probably the major points from a construction standpoint.
So right now there's a smoker's porch, but we don't want to have the smoking attached to the building.
No, currently the Joint Commission that oversees hospitals, since it will be a Mary Greeley program, will not allow it to be in the porch. So it has to be outside the building proper.
And we're trying to minimize its impact as much as possible.
Absolutely.
You know, it's a 6x10 shed.
Well, so I'm picturing an enclosed kind of bus stop.
Yeah. Exactly.
Is that what we're talking about here?
Yes.
And we're putting some lighting in that outside backyard area just so they're, it's visible from the house at night, even if there are people out there. But that's the majority of that.
Okay. My questions coming now were size of generator. It just feels, since we just put a generator into the human services building and knowing what the cost of that was, and it's a much larger system, makes me wonder, is this the size generator we need, or could we go with something a little smaller than that? And then the $15,000 for, in my mind, what is it, in essence, a bus stop right there, just felt like a lot.
Yeah, and I think from a generator standpoint, we've been back and forth a little with our engineer. I mean, he's probably sized it somewhat conservative, as engineers tend to do. In
sure.
Aspect. So the cost increment from, say, a 50-kilowatt generator to 60 is very minimal. So I think he's sizing it for the most conservative, making certain that the air conditioning, everything will function 100% during that time if there was a full power outage. I think we can review that with him and verify that that's absolutely the size necessary. So.
Because I've had a couple of conversations with Matt, electrical engineer, and I'm not an electrical engineer. I come up with a different size generator than he does. I come up with one about half the size. He's got 60 kW. I come up with 30 kW. But the price of the generator, there's not a huge increase in cost when you look at just the purchase of the generator. But what we need to look at is if the smaller generator requires, like, less of a pad to sit on. Like the 60 kW requires a pad with a footing and all that kind of stuff, and then which is more concrete work. There is a pad that's currently there that we had a shed on. We've removed the shed. If we go with the smaller generator, possibly we can get away from having to have a footing underneath that slab, which then we can utilize the slab that's already there. Because you figure $35,000 to $40,000 roughly would be for a new pad with footings and that kind of stuff. So there's potential savings in construction costs. Not necessarily so much on the actual generator itself, because when you go from 30 kW up to 60 kW, $3,000 increase in cost.
Okay.
So it's not huge when you look at the physical.
But it's the infrastructure to be able to hold it.
Because it is a physically larger piece of equipment. And then there's a couple of things I've talked with Matt about is whether you go with the diesel generator versus the natural gas. Because when diesel, you got to have a big fuel tank, which is more weight and that kind of stuff. But there's some limitations on whether or not the natural gas is, because they classify that as an unreliable fuel source.
Right.
So if you lose utility gas, then the generator's not going to run. So.
And I think he's I mean, we have a natural gas generator in right now.
Is that what
yeah,
it is?
Yeah. He has gone to that. It is simpler. It's, like I say, you don't have to keep diesel fuel. Sure. You don't have to keep those things clean and in stock. And so, and I, for the type of facility, is natural gas is acceptable as far as code, from a code standpoint, versus like the human services building. We did go with a diesel generator there simply because of code requirements. But for this site, we can go natural gas, and that is what he has in the plan right now.
And Chrissy, from Mary, I'm sorry, Morris, from Mary Greeley's perspective, just having a generator that's sized sufficiently to be able to run the building, fueled however is appropriate to fuel, is okay with Mary Greeley.
Yes.
Morris, go ahead.
Basically the same question. I was going to ask if you're bringing in a lot of equipment that must run regardless.
Yeah, so yeah, not a lot. I mean, it's primarily keeping the systems function, heating and cooling. Power. I mean, I guess their infrastructure of telecommunications.
But you don't anticipate having to bring in
respirators or anything
correct.
Like that.
No.
So that would bring me to: do we need the generator at all?
Right.
It's not critical to the function of the program. I mean, obviously, if it's a 24/7 program, if something happened, we'd have to relocate those people to an alternate location.
Mm-hmm.
So this would prohibit us to have to do that, hopefully. The other thing I'd like to throw out for an option is, you know, there are other 24/7 programs within the community, many. And if that location was unharmed, and other locations within the city, nursing home, other mainstream living, Optimate housing, that could be a temporary holding spot for people so we could transition them to an alternate location.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of makes that...
Well, it's a move that we've been... taken in the county of getting our facilities equipped with backup generators, but getting it equipped the right way for the right cost, I think, is really, really mm-hmm. important to us. Carla and Lisa Markley, talk to me for a minute about funding. As I understand it, the region has indicated a willingness to foot some of the bill to a certain dollar amount. It's still got to go before the board. And Lisa, we got money in this year's budget to do some work on this building, county dollars, is that right?
We're going to talk in the budget amendment process about how much I've put in there.
Uh-huh.
My understanding is the region is reimbursing up to $250,000. Does that sound right?
No. The CICS's administrative team is recommending up to $225,000.
Okay.
It will be on our governing board's agenda for this Thursday for discussion and action.
But that's kind of what the region's been talking about as we go through this, right? Which actually, if you look at the way this breaks out, so in my mind, Loris and Marty, the way I've been viewing this is we got a county-owned building that's currently used in a basically a residential capacity that we're talking about turning into more of a medical facility, not a hardened medical facility, but more of a medical facility. And it seems to me that work we do on a county-owned building that absolutely stays with the building regardless of use. So things like a generator or an outbuilding or things like that make sense that it would fall to us in the county to fund those kind of features. But then all the items that are particular to the services that Mary Greene is going to be providing, I'd love to see the region fund that. And interestingly enough, when you go through and you use that litmus test, we do come up to about $225,000 in those kind of costs, with the remainder, primarily in the generator, falling to the county, and it starts to make this whole thing work from a funding perspective.
Going back to the difference between the 30 and the 60, as far as the capacity itself, and Joey feels one way, your electrical engineer feels another way. What, in that 30 different spread, would we be getting capacity for?
Basically, it's a residential home. If you got your basic, just kind of general electrical use outlets and some lights, you got to look at your big demand items, which is going to be the central air, which there's two condensing units, and then it does have an electric range. So I figured in the full nameplate rating of both AC condensers, which means they both start at the same time and they're running full load amps continuous, and then using the range, basically the whole entire, all four burners in the ovens on high, to come up with, those three items, you're looking at basically 23 kW. And then I did a usage history, went and pulled the utility bills, and come down to the highest draw month, which was July of 2017, and then broke that down to the usage per hour and came up with 7.6 kilowatts over that 60-minute period, and then kind of just added that to the 23 kW and come around with around 30 kW in an extreme situation. That's how I came up with my number. So,
yeah, and I think we'll certainly get the engineer and Jovi together to review numbers and find out where they're at the right size of that before anything would be issued.
I like what Christy said about, you know, the facility, given who knows what would hit, that the facility itself might be able to provide a temporary holding center for someone like Mainstream or YSS, or, especially since you would have professionals already on staff who might help people deal with the stress, et cetera. But the building's not that big, so it's not like it's going to serve as a primary substitute resource. So I'm thinking, you know, worst case scenario, would we actually require double that power?
Well, and I'm not hearing it as a, so you got the conversation of size of generator, but I think we also need to have the conversation of, is that something we do right now? If it's not a requirement for Mary Greeley to get up servicing the items, the reality is we've got multiple county facilities right now that we could be doing something like that. And so what I wasn't clear on, and you guys help me if I'm missing this, I wasn't clear whether the generator was a necessary component for Mary Greeley to be able to go in and provide the services. If it's not, then I think that generator slides over to a conversation for us to have at a later date, rather than doing it right up front. And we get the things done we got to get done to get Mary Greeley in there, hopefully by August 1st, because I think that's the date we're talking about, right?
Yeah, I think they're looking for actual services to start later in August.
Well, we will flip our existing TLP program into the building, and then hopefully by the end of August, add the crisis stabilization beds.
Perfect. Yeah, so have the building prepared for Mary Greeley to take occupancy and get it ready to start providing services by August 1st. And it seems to me that both from a financial but also from a timing perspective, let's do the things we've got to do to be ready to go. And then if down the road we decide we need to put in a generator, we can go in and put in a generator without disrupting what's going on in the building.
Yeah, yeah, and we can certainly bid the generator as an alternate to this project just to get that price identified up front. I think that makes sense to do that and know the cost going in.
I just think we need to spend more time with the engineering and the generator side of it instead of throwing the number out there with the dollar tied to it just to get one put in, because
right,
we have a short window of time to complete
and a lot to do.
So yeah, because I just kind of compared it to the overall cost of the HSC generator in size, you know, size of generator we put there, which is 200 kW, the size of the building, and the total cost was 245.
Yeah,
so we're looking at generator and transfer switch and $25,000 to $30,000 installation cost, and we're at a quarter of the size of the generator, but half the cost of the HSC project. So I think a little bit more planning is in order on that.
Yeah, so I would like it, Morris, if you and Marty are okay with it, I'd like for us to move ahead with the concept of pulling the generator out and making it an alternate option that we may or may not do, but it's not something that's required as part of this project, which takes the total cost from, well, total, all in with contingency and everything, 440, but that reduces it down to, you know, 310 or something like that. Now all of a sudden we're right in the ballgame if we're getting 225 from the region and then the county is doing the things it has to do. I would imagine some of that, Jovi, is going to fall to you and your staff to do some of the preliminary stuff that we're talking about. I'd like the county to take responsibility for the smoking area, and Jovi, you figure that out through your.
We've got it pretty. I showed it to Jeff. I found one basically online stores, Granger, $2,700 for the structure. you put it together. There's already a concrete slab we're going to put it on. So I think that's an easy one. We can greatly reduce the cost of that type of structure. So
I just have a question about with putting it as an alternate so that we're going to do it separately. Do we incur any significant additional costs from that, either from the architectural planning or from the possibility of a contractor coming back in?
No, not. I mean, it's simply an alternate at the time of bidding and each accepted then, but no, there's no additional cost from design.
So what I'm hearing is we pull the generator and make it an alternate and an option. We pull the smoker's hut completely out, and we just count on Jovi and his staff to work with you guys to make sure that what we're putting in there suits the need, but then we handle that one in-house, Jovi, if you think you and your staff can handle it.
Yep, I don't see a problem with that at all.
Everything else that I see in here makes a whole lot of sense, and Carla, I think it fits with conceptually what the regional administrative team has been talking about having happen here.
Yes, I agree. I think so.
Okay. Marty Lawrence, other questions?
So on an alternate basis, you're going to price out 30 versus 60 kilowatts.
We'll sort that out ahead of time.
And then natural gas versus diesel.
I think we're pretty much committed to natural gas at this point, but we can talk about the diesel option. I think the natural gas is the way to go because it'll reduce our maintenance costs on it over the...
Right. I'm okay with pushing it off to the side, but I would like to keep close for the fact that it's hard to believe that the Human Services Building was built without a generator. It felt this board put one there. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, I think, as this will be a 24-hour day facility, I think this is something we, as money permits, this is something we bring back to ourselves. And a firm sense of costing would be a great help in that sense. Carl, I would ask you, as the conversation has been had at your level in the region, the $225,000 that they would be willing to help us on deferment of this expense, how was that number derived and how firm is that?
That number was based off of original figures we received from Mary Greeley when they had gone through the building and looked at the different things that they felt needed to be changed. I think that number came in about $201,000. And so then we just bumped it up a little bit up to the $225,000. And so when you do look at the current proposal, I think the areas that they're, as Rick talked about, the things that need to be done to get the services into the building, that comes close to around that
$225,000. All right. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, it hasn't gone to the governance board other than just the proposal.
Right.
So I just didn't know if there was any, you know, how you got there. I guess it just that we've been talking about $225,000 for quite some time, and I know we'll be talking about this here Thursday.
And Marty, I just say this about the generator, at least from my perspective, and let's just get an initial feeling from this board. I believe keeping it on the table and talking it through makes a whole lot of sense, but I'd like to have the generator conversation as part of a bigger facilities type conversation where we've got multiple facilities here in Story County that do not have generators that might be more appropriate if we're talking about it serving as a point of refuge if we have big problems in the community. We might have some places, I'm thinking of McFarland Park, I'm thinking of some other places, that are more appropriate for us to spend dollars for generating capabilities, and I think that this would fall into that pot for a full conversation of us probably later this fall as we start looking at our 2020 budget, rather than unless we put this out for bid and we get some miraculous bids back and it just all of a sudden makes sense to do it now, that's the way I'm viewing this.
I'm asking to be spec'd out on an alternate basis, yep. Find out what our choices are and how much, and then we move after knowing that.
So what I'm hearing is we're going to separate the generator, have that as an alternate. We're going to pull out the smoker's hut, handle that one in-house. If there's no further conversation, I take a motion approving the plans with those alterations.
I would so move that we approve these plans with the stated alternates as stated by Supervisor Sanders.
Sorry. Motion and second. Further discussion? Great job by you guys. Thank you so much. Kristen, we're so excited to get this up and going.
We are too.
So, outstanding. Olson.
Aye.
Chee. Sanders, aye. Thank you, guys.
Jen, I just wanted to say that I'm really impressed with how your cost the animal shelter, and that it's very clear how what we're talking about, you know, and the dollar amount. So thank you for that.
Outstanding. Thank you. Next, we get to hear from our friend Chuck Long with the Iowa Sports Foundation. Love Iowa Games.
How you guys doing?
Morning. I'm not even wearing black and gold today. That's always a great day.
Well, we have Dave in the house, and it's great to have him.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I just wrote a book. I didn't write it. I have an author that wrote it. And there's a great farming element in the book. It goes back to Hay the Fry in the 80s and America Needs Farmers.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah.
A lot of fun.
Yep.
Great to be here. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm assuming you want an update of the Iowa game.
Absolutely.
So, well, no one likes this word anymore, but we just finished up the winter games.
We did.
We just finished up the winter games in another county in Dubuque, and we had about 4,000 participants. And we're always hovering around 4,000 participants in Dubuque, Cedar Rapids, and Iowa City. And we just opened up Iowa City. You know, I'm a Hawkeye. I finally got it done, right, Rick? Now we're entering our big summer games phase, and this is where your county comes into play. But we anticipate around 14,000 athletes this year for our summer games from ages 5 to 95. We have a 94-year-old 100-yard dash champion. Quite amazing. We've also added corporate games. We're in our third year of corporate games and they're the Des Moines corporate games, but they stretch all the way up to Ames, which is going to add between 5,000 and 7,000 more participants.
Wow.
And those are infused with our summer games. So those participants, it's a whole different deal. It's basically company versus company fighting it out for a trophy. A lot of competition involved and a lot of different kinds of sports. But also there's a blood drive. They can earn points for a blood drive and a walk and volunteerism as well. Uh-huh. But that adds about 5,000 to 7,000 more people. So we're up and running and doing well, and we're excited about our 32nd summer, and it's going strong. So it's gonna take a lot of planning. I mean, for June and July, we have to start planning right now.
Absolutely. Well, and for us here in Story County, that's an interesting one-week stretch that we've got coming, right? We've got the Iowa games that conclude on Sunday. We've got Ragri coming in here, I think, on Tuesday and Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And then we've got Odyssey of the Mind starting the next weekend. I mean, that's a heck of a stretch we've got going. And so Story County is a longtime supporter of the Iowa
long
games,
time.
Long before any of us were involved in the Iowa games.
We appreciate it.
I would hope that's exactly what this board intends to continue. We put it in the budget at the same level that we've had in previous years. Correct.
I'd like to talk a process, okay, we ask that going forward, that whether it be today that you, or I guess it has to be on the agenda next week, but that we actually get a motion, that we put it on as a motion. So like when the Commission of Visitors Bureau came and asked us for money for RAGRI, you know, it said that we had a discussion and consideration about money for RAGRI. And so what I'd like to do is so that all of the asks on a tourism basis are consistent, that we put this on the agenda for coming up so that we actually are voting on it.
Yeah, so I really appreciate that point of view. I've got a little different point of view, and so I'll share it with you. I think we've got two levels of funding that the Board of Supervisors does, and we use both, right? So we fund our libraries, and we fund our historical societies, and we fund libraries, and we fund Iowa games traditionally as we set the budget. And then we have other asks that are external to setting the budget, which would be exactly what we just did last week with RAGRI. And I believe that both are appropriate, and it's not like we don't vote on continuing to fund Iowa games. If there was ever a move by a Board of Supervisors to change the funding model for the Iowa games, it can either happen, Morris, as we're setting the budget, or if somebody wanted to happen, it happen externally, up or down, they could make that as a separate motion. But I'm not sure that I'm not sure that I see the benefit of saying things that have been traditionally part of our budget cycle. So are we going to want the libraries to all come individually? Are we going to want the historical societies to come individually? I'm not sure I see the benefit of doing these long-standing, I think extremely appropriate offers of support from the county that we want to pull them out just to create more paperwork.
Okay. First of all, it's about consistency. Second of all, I don't feel that our libraries or our historical societies are the same as the sports tourism issue, okay? And so last year, when you came and there was no ask, I didn't even understand. I thought the ask was coming later, and then when I found out we funded, I had to go back and talk to Alyssa and talk to Lisa and discovered it's just this long-standing item in the budget. And now you're here this year, but there's not a move in consideration. And I feel tourism is different. I'd like to actually see us as we move forward and are able to make other entities in the community that have that kind of scale, okay, because you definitely have scale, to be able to come forward. And I think that, yeah, it's tradition, but it's a little presumptive. Okay, so from my mind, in that traditionally we funded you, but we all, Special Olympics comes every year. That's a big event, and we don't fund them. So I'd like to at least have an actual motion every year so we're treating all tourism entities, all of these event entities separate, just so that it's consistent from what you're saying, the historical and the library. So yeah, I see it's real public good, and I see you more as a special event or an economic generator.
Well, and I see the Iowa Games as a real public good for our community, and clearly that's what traditional the Board of Supervisors has traditionally felt. But I would hold the Iowa Games specifically out as the exception. First of all, I think we do, on an ongoing basis, fund other types of events, but I can't think of any off the top of my head. I don't know if you can, Lisa. But for the Iowa Games, there, you know, I think you kind of diminish it when you say, oh, it's just a tourism kind of thing. There is nothing else like it in the state of Iowa. There's nothing else. I mean, yeah, they're trying to build the Winter Games, but it's not anywhere close. There's nothing else like it. It's been here forever. We want it here forever. We've always supported it, and it just makes sense that we don't say, well, Chuck, you've got to come, Chuck or whoever, you got to come with your hat in your hand and hope that we're going to fund you this year. We're building it as part of our budget because it's important to Story County, much like our libraries and our historical societies are important to Story County, and we build it in. And you're right, Lars, it is treating them a little different than other kind of more one-off or every so often we have these things. This is an annual event that there was a reason. I don't even know when it went in, Lars. Lisa, it was back in the 90s or...
Yeah, I'm thinking, quite frankly, 20, at least 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's been in forever, and I think there's a reason it's been in forever. And I respect, Lars, that you see it differently, and you see it as just a tourism event. I see it as so much more than that, so much more important than that. And so I'm one that believes it's appropriate to leave it in the budget. Marty, Like often happens, you get to be the deciding vote in these.
Here's how I see it. It has a 32-year history. We've had multiple directors. You just explained to us how it's grown. It's evolving. It's not a static model. The funding has been long-term. It's part of the budgeting process at the beginning of the year. I would be comfortable having a conversation about this then.
I definitely will be bringing it up in our January workshop about how we change how we handle our tourism.
Sure. Well, and to bring up the Story County Fair as well, because that should fit in there. I mean, I think there's a lot of different types of items that if you start splitting hairs, we better be talking about all of them.
Yes, I understand we're moving onward with this. We've come for a presentation. It will be an interesting discussion about how sports it plays in also. But thank you very much. I mean, you know, I know we want to move ahead. Thank you for being. It's not against you. It's all I'm asking for is a consistency and process about that there actually be a line item giving you the money every year. I mean, you know, of the facilities. That's all I'm asking.
There is a line item. There absolutely
I mean,
is a line
there is,
item.
There's a motion and consideration. Motion. That's what I was asking.
We set the budget every year. Okay. All right. Anything else for Chuck? Anything else to report to? Sorry you had to sit through that. Anything else?
No, I'm good.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's been good, and again, we're growing, and we have participants and all from all 99 counties. We're very proud of that, too. So.
Well, we love having you here. We're so appreciative that you guys bring it here every year, and proud that when people think of Summer Games, they think of Story County and Ames.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
You bet.
We have a presentation we need to do?
I have a plaque.
Absolutely. We need the plaque. Tell us what the plaque says.
Well, the plaque says, let's see.
We got a blank spot over there sitting waiting for
it. To Summer Games, Iowa Games sponsor, Story County Board of Supervisors.
Outstanding. Let's take a picture.
This was last year's. This was this year's.
Okay, we remember that. Okay, slide. There you go.
Okay, count three. I'll take several. One, two, three. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, buddy. Thanks,
Yeah. Thank you. Good to see you.
Good to see you. Too.
Chuck, I think I can tag you.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you all.
See you later.
Have a good day. Enjoy that weather. Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
You're heading to the golf course from here, aren't you?
Where's all of us?
All right. Consideration of minutes from April 17th.
As presented.
Second.
Motion and a second. Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Personnel actions as listed. Board.
As presented.
Second. Motion and a second. Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Consent agenda.
As presented.
Second.
Motion and a second. Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. There. So public hearing items, we've got one today. We got second consideration of Ordinance 270 dealing with alluvial.
Yep.
Welcome back, Lillian.
Thank you. So again, this is a rezoning to the agribusiness A2 district for the 40-acre property alluvial is located on. I can't pick up the computer. But you did the first consideration at your April 17th meeting. I recommend it approved with conditions. Today's second consideration, we have received no additional comments, and we reached out to the county attorney's office that relayed that if you waive the third consideration, approved on second consideration, that it would not be repealed with the upcoming codification process.
Perfect. Yeah, so I was going to ask about that since next week is a limited agenda. We wouldn't be able to do third reading, so I was going to ask if there was comfort, especially with no additional announcements, comfort going ahead and waiving third reading and making today's final. Any thoughts on that before we open the public hearing?
None.
Okay, so in that case, I'm going to open the public hearing and ask if there's anyone who would like to address us on Ordinance 270. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, I'll close the public hearing, turn to the board for potential action.
Move second consideration, ordinance 270, with conditions, and set third and final consideration.
No.
Unless you don't want to, so we don't have, we got a limited agenda next week.
No, I want to waive. Okay, I'm not reading my note. Or waive our third and final reading.
I would second.
All right, we got a motion and a second to approve on second, waive third, making this the final. Further conversation. Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes and we're done. Good job.
Thank you, Mary.
All right. We're to additional items. We're going to consider a publication for setting a public hearing for our FY18 budget amendment, trying to make sure that we've got the dollars where they need to be for the rest of 2018.
Good morning, Lisa.
Hi, Lisa.
Good morning. Happy spring, finally. So I'm going to go through this, and then I'm going to tell you what changes I think we need to make already.
Okay.
When we set the original FY18 budget, when we amended the FY18 budget, the things that we did not take care of at that point in time were the remaining salary needs for all the departments, because that's something that we do with this final one. A lot of the dollars in here are for that purpose, okay? But there are some large ticket items also that are included in this amendment. I can go through department by department, or you can look at your information and see what's highlighted, which means that was requested by departments. I assume you figured that much out.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to email you and I forgot. I'm sorry. The one thing I do think we now need to increase. So the Hazel Group home. We are getting reimbursed. I don't have that as a reimbursement anywhere because I don't think that's going to happen in FY18.
I agree.
It's going to happen in 19 that we get reimbursed because it's a spend it, get reimbursed situation. I don't think 250 is enough, obviously.
Right.
Because we just decided.
What do we have in the budget for this year?
I'm amending in 250 in here.
Okay. And okay. You think we're going to spend some of that this year?
Yeah. I think there's a good possibility. I think we're going to spend some of it this year.
We better have it in case we.
Right. So I either increase that to the 300 and approximately 320, something like that, now, or I leave it at 250, assume we're going to spend the rest of it first thing in the next fiscal year and amend it in then. Because mm-hmm. We're going to have an amendment first thing into the new fiscal year anyway.
I can't imagine that we're going to have a way to spend more than 250 from the time Optimay is staying through the end of May, right? So we get to start work in June, and we've got to be finished by August. I can't imagine that we're going to spend more than half the project, especially by the time you get through billing cycles and everything else. We're going to be paying those bills in July and August. So I think 250 is more than enough. Morris, Marty, unless you feel
good. Tom West and Joby, you shake his head as far as what he can get done, and I think this is going to spill into the next fiscal.
I think too. So I think we're going to, I think it makes sense to put 250 in. I don't think we're going to spend anywhere close to 250, and then it'll just carry over into FY19, and we'll be paying for that and then some.
Yeah, we'll amend the budget for that at the beginning of, because I'm pretty sure July is going to have to be a budget amendment. Three departments have position increase or positions that we're increasing for, so which you guys have already voted on taking care of. I'm just putting those in there. Couple things to note, probably. Oh, the RAGBRAI amount is being amended in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then in the let me get to it. County-wide services, conversation about adding COLO mm-hmm. for the historical societies mm-hmm. so that we get them some dollars spent yet this year.
Yep.
Other than that, I was the one that did the revenue re-estimations with a couple of exceptions. I did. The recorder gave me some ideas of where she thinks she's going to be in her revenues, mm-hmm. and conservation did theirs because of grants. Obviously, as you can tell, their expenditures are going way down, as are their revenues. Mm-hmm. Their grants just aren't happening as fast, which is typical. It happens sure. every year with us.
Well, that's reflected in the intergovernmental, which is basically money that we were expecting to mm-hmm. come from the state of Iowa or smaller
or what right ever yeah some sort of grant
right
and then yeah there isn't a lot of there isn't a lot of things to talk about on the revenue side. Obviously, the revenues are going down from what we originally budgeted. But I just wanted to point out that those revenues are revenues that I actually determined I think we need to amend. I didn't really hear a lot from departments on that.
Yeah, so I've got four thoughts, and let's see if you agree with these. One, if you combine the extra $500,000 that we're sending to the region with our salaries going from 95% to up to 100%, right? You combine those two, that's basically the 1.6 that we're looking at going up. It seems to me that we've got we're in one of those cycles where we seem to be really caught up on projects. So for the last 4 or 5 years, we've had projects that were spilling over, large projects spilling over from one fiscal year to the next. And we seem to have fewer of those, specifically in secondary roads, but we seem to have fewer of those this year than we've had before. So we're getting more of a true picture. End of year, we're getting more of a true picture of where we are. And then the final thought I have is, when you look at our ending fund balances, if this is in fact a true picture of where we are, and it's not off just a little because we got a project that's spilled over from one fiscal year to the next, you look at us at 25.4% in the general fund, perfect. 27.68% in unrestricted supplemental, perfect. 19% in rural services. I mean, it just looks to me like all of our ending fund balances are right where we need them to be, and it's responsible for them to be. What do you think, Lisa?
Yeah, I agree completely. The one thing you didn't mention is the amendment in for $743,000, which is fund balance of the capital projects fund.
Right.
That TELC project is something that's carrying back and forth. Yeah. But other than that, you're exactly right. The revenue's going down almost 2%. The expenses going up 3.5%.
Right.
So overall, that's fairly normal. You know, I'd like to see the revenues going up, but I also understand the whole grant process and how if they're not going to get them this year, we're not going to show them as revenues. So
it's interesting that when we set the budget, and, you know, we talk about a balanced budget, and then by the time we get to at least fiscal year 18, we've got a difference in spread and the different factors that go in to affecting what happens throughout the year.
Sure, but that's the reason that you set a balanced budget,
right,
so that you can accommodate. So we set a balanced budget, and some year, because of the cyclical nature of the way it works, you end up right at the end of the year with more revenues than you expected and fewer expenses, and some years you end up with fewer revenues and more expenses. But by setting a consistent balanced budget, you give yourself the capacity to do this and still have $16 million in reserve.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the key to the system we've been running for the last few years.
So I have a question. It just caught my eye here under the revenues. $75,000 donation to secondary roads. So is it used, you know, who donated, if you can say, or what was that money from?
So we actually there's going to be another.
One right above it, local government payments, is where the other $75,000.
And you got that coming in yet this year, right?
So
that's the, the $150,000. So what we agreed to with Gilbert, so the conversation between the Board of Supervisors, City of Gilbert, and the Gilbert School System.
2 years ago at the budget work sessions.
Exactly. We agreed that we would pave, this is 530th Grand Breton going north to Gilbert High School, basically. We agreed that we would pave that, and we agreed at that point that we would put in an off-street bike path. And that off-street bike path, Darren estimated, was going to be about $300,000. And we had a general agreement that the county would pick up half of that $300,000, and Gilbert somehow, some way, would pick up the other half. And the $75,000 donation is from an individual in Gilbert, and I mean, I think it's probably a public record, but I prefer not to say it. If somebody wants to request it, they can request it. And then in talking to the mayor of Gilbert, we expect to receive hopefully all of that other $75,000, but at least most of that other $75,000 by the end of this fiscal year.
Yeah, and it was a head scratcher for secondary roads too, because they're not used to donations.
Yeah.
Oh, like I said, I just saw that and I said, I gotta ask. The amount looked like I thought that.
Yep, that's exactly what it is.
Thank you.
Other questions for Markley before we approve sending this to publication?
None. I appreciate the highlighting. That's something, you know, it makes it easy to get drawn to. It kind of reflects back on what we've done and brings to the current date.
So I just underscore, we are in a phenomenally strong fiscal position, And it is absolutely based on the work that Lisa and others have done over the last 7 or 8 years to get us to this point. Because in 2010 and 11, we weren't able to fix $150,000 leak in the roof over in the auditor's office, and we weren't able to give reliable raises to our employees. We sure weren't able to consider things like RAGBRAI requesting $6,000. I mean, we had to say no to everything, and through a lot of hard work over the last 8 years or so, we've gotten to a position where, we're as solid fiscally as any county in the state of Iowa. Thanks, Lisa. Nothing else, I take a motion to send this to publication.
So moved.
Second.
Motion is second. Further discussion?
None.
Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Please publish this.
Thank you, Lisa.
All right. So now we've got multiple policies, HR policy. Oh, no, we're doing Cambridge first. Yep. Facade grant from the city of Cambridge. Leanne Hart. Hi, Leanne.
Good morning, Leanne. Hopefully. I have just a simple slideshow that should look familiar from past years. We have a request from the City of Cambridge, acting as the applicant for a facade grant application. Just some general review. The program guidelines, it is financial assistance to the city governments. They are required to provide a match equal to or greater than that provided by Story County. It's for facade improvements, and the overall goal is to support revitalization of the business districts in our smaller communities. Those are under 2,000 persons, with one exception, which I'll get to shortly at the end here. It's a one-time reimbursement grant of up to 20% of the total project cost, or not more than $10,000. So in this case, it's under $10,000. I'll show you where we are this year for the budget as well. And as I already said, the city does have to provide matching funds. Those can be either direct cash or in-kind as well. And the requirements of our program guidelines do spell out what that type of in-kind is. City is the applicant. Again, it's for those communities in Story County under 2,000 individuals. I'm not going to go over this, but this is just the eligible improvements. Mm-hmm. It's what's visible from the road right away. And so you look at various aspects of where that is from the road right-of-way as well. So getting to the project before you, we really need to fix that screen up there. It looks...
Laura's got it handled. She's working on it.
We have an update later.
Totally different. I feel like it's Smurf Town here. The project is located at 217 Water Street. The owners... It's actually DSLP Properties, LLC, according to the assessor's website, but the individual is named Dan Price, did sign the materials submitted. So as you can see from the image to the right of the screen, right here, this is the construction of the community building. So it's right immediately.
It's the courtyard between the community building and this building.
Yeah, which there's another image that you'll see that they provided. So there's a north arrow, and then the request is that property. So as Greg just said, here's the courtyard in between, and it's this north-facing wall of the building. The request is to remove stucco that you'll see from the picture soon, and there are several areas on the outside where tuck pointing needs to occur to repair the brick and make it stable. Total project costs are $5,850. The county's they're requesting from the county $1,170, matching equally, and then the remaining is responsibility of the property owner. Oh, that image. So as you can't see very well because of the colors, this is where miscellaneous tuck pointing will occur. So this is that courtyard area. The front of the building is right here off the screen. Community building is over here to the right. This at one point was all white stucco, and they've begun peeling it away. So it's the remainder of that, and then again the tuck pointing throughout. That's it on the request. I thought it'd be beneficial just to see what we've done thus far with this program and since its inception. I'll just start total by community, a little, not including this request. This is what's already been awarded. A little over $27,000, actually $27,323.55. The communities of Cambridge, Roland, Slater, Story City, and Zeering have all applied and been awarded through the various years. Story City is that community that's above 2,000. And if you'll recall, last fall they did, I think it was last fall, it's within fiscal year 2018, they came before the board and asked for special consideration. The board did approve that. So this year we have, we budget annually $10,000. We do have, coincidentally enough, a little under, around the amount that's requested by the City of Cambridge. With that, I think that's it. Any questions?
I think it's a great project. I think it's phenomenal that the county's been able to impact that many communities getting these projects done. I think this is a really good project. I know we've all been down to the new community center for various things, fish fries or whatever. This courtyard is going to be heavily, heavily used, and I think it's completely appropriate to get that wall that basically is one of the courtyard enclosures repaired. I think it's good for the building. I appreciate that the owner of the building is coming up with 60% and we're splitting the rest with, or would split the rest with Cambridge, and I hope we'll support this.
Looking at the photos, first of all, I mean, they were lucky that the graffiti was G-rated and the decline is, the decline of the building is very clear. I do like the facade grant program, and one of the reasons I like it so much, in addition to the kind of the joint contributions, you know, the shared investment here, is the fact that it is a visual impact upstart right away, that the community can see what happened. They take a pride in seeing that a building has had some fix to it. And so, yes, I like it. With that, I'll make the motion. How about that? So we'll move on with. I move that we approve this application.
No, I agree, Loris. I think you said it well, in the sense this is seed money to spur our smaller communities into either committing to repairing or doing what small maintenance they can. And the fact that, as Rick said, that the property owner has the most money in it, this is a textbook case. I applaud the City Fathers of Cambridge for being aware of this, using this, and I second it.
Perfect. Yeah, so the reality is, if you look at this program, in addition to our Main Street Revitalization Program, you look at the impact that that has had specifically on our smaller communities, but you can even include Story City in there, and Gilbert, who have all taken advantage in one way or another of those. The reality is, over many years, nothing had happened on the main streets of our smallest towns. It just hadn't happened. You look at Zeering or Collins or any one of our smallest towns, and by the county stepping up and offering what is a relatively small amount, In the overall picture, it's a relatively small amount, but it spurred some unbelievable revitalization among our smallest towns. And it's vital. I believe it's vital to the long-term health of Story County. It's the reason that Leanne and I worked so hard to come up with this program, and ultimately I think why Wayne and Paul too supported the creation of these programs. And I hope these are the kind of things that we'll continue to do over the long haul. Appreciate the motion and the second. Any further discussion?
Huh.
Olson.
Aye.
Chee.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes. Let the young know you got another one, even though he was background on this one. Now we're doing policy reviews, and we've got a bunch of 7 days, or actually more like 14-day or even 21-day reviews. I would like us to deal with these. We're going to make a motion on each one individually, but I'd like Alyssa, for our conversation, just run through all of these. Let's deal with it in one conversation instead of making it piecemeal.
Sure, I'll do that. I have There were just a couple. I met with our civil attorney yesterday. I had a few recommendations, so I have a few revisions. I'll put this out. They're highlighted. That's very easy to see.
Thank you.
Okay, and a few extra copies too of each, in case there's anybody. So, what I did is we did put this out for, it ended up being a 14-day review. I got very minimal comments back. I don't know if any three of you received any comments.
None.
And I'll open it up if there's anybody that wants to comment that's here. And I'll just go through each of these. Holiday policy, there was a comment that possibly we have, you know, there's a religious portion in here, somebody wants to take off religious holiday. We make, they work at different times. They just suggested maybe the addition of an ethnic holiday. They considered MLK as an ethnic holiday. That was just a comment that was made. And then they also made a comment about, you know, how much do part-time employees receive? And it's always based on their, what percentage of their full-time status. So you'll notice under the holiday, I did clarify that, just so it's very clear of how we administrate that. Nothing different than what we've done for years. So that's all under the holiday. On the on-call and call-back, didn't receive any comments. There was some discussion, you know, previously on the on-call, the employees used to get to consider whatever an hour as actual hours worked. We haven't done that for quite a few years. We go with what the FLSA regulations are on that, and that's what's put in our policy. So, changes on that one. Overtime, I did not have any comments on overtime. I did have a change under compensatory time. It previously said disagreements will be handled through normal problem resolution procedures. Change the word problem to conflict. Paid leave. We had a question about, you know, what type of certification from the court. The court will provide whatever documentation individual needs. In order, we pay our employees their normal compensation when they are called for jury duty. And then they turn over their daily rate, whatever the court paid them for that. There was also a comment that in parking and mileage reimbursement should be cut by an employee. It currently is. So we don't require them. I mean, if they're driving, obviously they're driving their own vehicle, they get to keep the mileage. Mm-hmm. Or meal reimbursement or parking reimbursement. I did add that to the policy, just so that's very clear. There's no question about that. Classification and compensation policy. The only addition that we made was about supplemental pay. I did not have any comments with that. There were some other questions. I'll clarify that with the individual. And then the only thing that's highlighted was it was done in a different format, so I changed it to match all the other policies. Sick leave policy, comment instead of physician statement. Use the verbiage licensed healthcare provider statement. So I did say that I did change that. That is also inconsistent with ADA and also FMLA certifications we received. The uniform allowance policy, the only change that I made from what was on the agenda is I included the statement requirements for safety footwear will be determined by each individual department or office. We want to make sure that an individual should be wearing safety footwear, that they're wearing the appropriate. And having a policy that's fairly broad, because we have very varied positions, not everyone needs the same safety footwear. So this will allow our departments or elected officials to, you know, have an internal policy as far as this is what you should be wearing and go from there. So that's why that statement was put in there. But this policy does allow us to have some consistency of how every department is doing reimbursement. Vacation policy, I don't have anything changed. It was, the comment was, you know, is there a possibility or had a discussion that the additional vacation accrual passed the 10 years? There are some cities, the state, there are some counties that do 5 weeks accrual. There was a discussion quite a few years ago about that. The board decided not to move forward at that point, so I wanted to bring that up. As far as, you know, we cap out at 10 years right now. The policy does allow for those that have been here 15 years or longer to carry over 20 extra hours. And we do have some tenured employees that aren't able to utilize all 4 weeks that they accrue in a year. Even though they get to carry over a week, they're not able to take that much time off. So that additional accruals will help that. Mm-hmm. So that's all that was brought up.
Questions, comments?
I'd like to come back to the ethnic holiday. So an employee can take it as a vacation day, correct?
Absolutely. And the religious holiday, we don't let the employees take the religious holidays and we just pay them for it. So they still have to either work those hours or they take it as vacation. But we will alter their work schedule if they, you know, if there's a religious holiday and they want to observe that, we'll work with them so that they have that time off. But they'll work a different schedule, whether they work a different shift that day or they take a day of vacation.
Yeah, and just to note, many, many places, including Iowa State University, don't take President's Day but do take MLK Day.
Okay.
That may be appropriate for us to consider, but our employees can always take vacation on one of these days if they deem it.
And there's many counties that do that too. I mean, it depends. It's either President's or MLK.
Right. Not, I don't know of anybody who does both.
I can't.
Any other questions or comment on any of these? And if not, I'm going to ask that we really move through.
We're going to do these individually.
We're doing it individually, but we're going to do it quick. All right, then. All right, so.
Can I just make one comment?
Yeah.
They're effective July 1st.
All effective.
All effective.
Let me make a comment before we get into this this motion-a-thon. So when Paul Toot and I joined the board, and this actually goes back to our previous conversation about budget. When Paul Toot and I joined the board, as unfathomable as this is, there was no HR department for Story County. We had 371 employees at that time, and largely because we couldn't afford it, didn't have a full-time. I mean, we got two full-times and an intern now, but did not have a full-time HR director. We had farmed it out to one of these pay-as-you-go HR sources, and I think the gentleman was spending 2 days a week here or something like that. And Paul and I came in and looked at that and said, that's setting Story County up for problems. And so very early on, we it was actually the first position we created when Paul and I came in. We created the HR position, and then we were wise enough to lure Alyssa away from her role in the auditor's office to take over. And I'm going to tell you right now, Story County has as good a HR program as at least any other county, and I'd go a step further and say any other local government entity, and I think that is evidenced by the way Alyssa is leaned on by her peers when they have questions of what's going on in any of their entities. And I don't want to just leave it with Alyssa because it's phenomenal to have Noelle. The reality is Story County is in a great position in terms of HR because of the decision their previous board made and the decision they made to hire to create the program and then hire Alyssa to fill the program, and then the decision we made along the line, we're fortunate where we are.
I really appreciated everything from how you helped with orienting me to the county, to your advice, to just like you handled all these policies and really worked hard on them. Thank you.
Yeah, and so just a word of caution for boards of supervisors everywhere. When you put yourself in a spot financially that you can't say yes to even the most necessary of positions, basically $100,000 all-in position, right, by the time you include benefits and everything else. But we were in a position, if you can't fix a $150,000 leak in the roof and you can't give existing employees reliable raises, how the heck can you create a position? You know, you can't do it. And it's one of the things that I'm proud we're in a position to address what's needed. Nothing further, I take motions.
Oh, okay. And remember where we're
yeah,
going.
So,
okay. I appreciate the historical perspective because having come out of the world, both on the education side and private industry, to see this as Alyssa moved from the auditor's office to this is just like, can't believe it. Once again, I would use the approval of the generator over at Human Services. Mm-hmm. How did you build a building like that and not put a backup generator? How did you run this government without human resources?
And I credit this board for having a good sense to put a risk manager in the mix going forward to identify the unforeseen so we need to know to be better at what we do. I would make a motion to approve the holiday policy as presented.
Good.
Effective July 1.
Yep.
Second.
Motion second. Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. On call.
I would make a motion that we approve the on-call and callback compensation policy as presented effective July 1.
Second.
Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Second.
Sanders. Aye. Your second was an aye.
Okay. It's like I got the flashback to actually running the meeting.
That's right. Compensation policy.
I move that we accept the compensation policy as presented effective July 1.
Second.
Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye.
Well,
overtime. Sorry.
Overtime.
Yeah.
Overtime. That's what I thought.
Overtime.
Okay. But it's overtime.
Yep.
So we've done overtime, or we did come.
Yep. We did it. Now we're to consideration of paid leave.
Move approval of paid leave policy as presented effective July 1.
Aye. Second.
Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Now we're classification and compensation policy.
I move that we approve the classification and compensation policy as presented effective July 1.
Second.
Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Now sick leave.
Move consideration of sick leave as presented effective July 1.
Second.
Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Now uniform allowance.
I move we approve uniform allowance policy effective July 1 as presented.
Second.
Olson.
Aye.
Chief. Sanders. Aye. Vacation policy.
Move consideration of vacation policy as presented effective July 1.
Second.
Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. That was a good rhythm we got into right there. Outstanding. Thanks, Alyssa. Good job.
Thank you, Alyssa. There was a lot of work that, as she compared it to other counties and did some outreach, you know, just can't go a day without stepping into her office and talking to her about things. Very small.
Clark County's in good hands. Next is discussion consideration regarding the status availability of Crestview Mobile Home Park Relocation Assistance Fund. Carla, could it be we're about to the end of this conversation?
I believe so.
All right.
I'm here today. We will be coming up on a year in June since the board made the relocation assistance funds available. And if you recall, at that time, back in June of 2017, you had approved up to $3,000 per occupied mobile home for any resident that was in that mobile home as of June 1st or before. So we went through a modified application process. We received a total of 14 different applications from 14 different mobile homes. We are to the point, we have a little bit of contact with a couple of folks yet who are still working to secure housing. We're paying storage for them. But pretty much our contact with other folks has dwindled off. Folks have either exhausted what was available to them as far as the $3,000, or they've exhausted what the funds can be used for. Multiple people we've paid out the first month's rent deposit and up to 25% of monthly rent for 3 months. So those folks are now in other housing, so there's not really anything more for us to pay for those individuals. We've expended, just in FY18, we've expended $23,348.60. So there is still dollars left for folks. I believe we have just one person who has fully exhausted the $3,000. Another person is down to $40. And then from there on out, it's a wide range of what people have left. We did have two folks that ended up not using the assistance at all. They moved on to other housing. They were talking with us about demolition assistance. This was way back last fall. We reached out to them again last in November, asking them to get in touch with us, and we have not heard anything from them. So I don't know if we'll hear from them, if we put an end date on this or not, but I feel we've done our part to reach out to them and see what we can do to assist.
Super. Thanks, Carl. Questions or comments for Carl?
I would have to say this is a very delicate issue as we stepped into as it presented itself in an awkward manner as it fell out of the Board of Health and moved to us. Carl, how long have you been in Human Services Mental Health?
I've been with our office 20 years last month.
How do you do? I mean, if somebody were to ask how Crestview was dealt with, what would you tell them?
I would hope that the residents felt they could come to us for assistance. I think we have built a relationship and a rapport with several of the individuals. So I cannot speak for anybody, but I feel our office did their due diligence to help everyone that was there. Mm-hmm. We had our outreach efforts. We worked across multiple county departments, worked with several community members, various landlords, resources, and that.
Yeah, and I think you're being modest. I think we went above and beyond. I think you and your staff went way above and beyond. And we did things that frankly, we didn't have to do. Assisting people moving out of the county. You know, doing some things that we didn't have to do just to try to make sure that as many of these individuals as possible ended up in a better, more stable position than they were in Crestview. And, so we were talking with Dave Toot earlier. Paul Toot's been gone almost 2 years. On May 6th, it'll be 2 years. This was his starting out. I mean, that's how long this has been percolating. I remember the first time he went out there and looked at the situation. He was chair of the Board of Health at that time as well. And coming back and saying, he said, Rick, he said, we got real problems. I don't know how we handle this. I don't know what we do. It was right when the whole Flint, Michigan stuff was happening. And I just think Story County really put its best foot forward, as we do so often in tough times. Put our best foot forward and really came together to do what was right. You got to single out George and Peter for hosting Vendetta. I mean, you just think of the number of people that went above and beyond in order to try to assist really our least fortunate individuals in Story County. So,
Carly, you were a clearinghouse of private and public. Candies, I would say, I was looking for the word success, but you didn't say it, but this was a success as best we can define it. We went above and beyond. We actually helped people that have left the county. We knew that it was going to be difficult at best, and success is kind of sometimes this prorated thing, and I guess that would be this case too, but this is government. When government does, it's not a heavy hand of government. It was government working, I think, as best as it could to bring all its powers to be, because we brought in how many different departments to address this facility, shall I say. But I, as I see it, as we get to the end point of people in need and having expended the dollars, I would think that we would be well advised to possibly say at a date certain that we put the $3,000 per home available, maybe we should be talking about an endpoint of that availability.
I agree with that completely. I'd like you guys to consider June 15th of 2018 as that endpoint. That's fully a year and 2 days after we initially approved this. It is early enough that we can still close it all out in this fiscal year. If we finish it off on June 15th, and by the time we get the paperwork done, we're still in FY18. I think that is most appropriate. And the reality is, it's not for lack of trying. The people that have not exhausted the allowable funds, or the ones that haven't taken anything at this point, it's not from Carl and her staff lack of effort in reaching out to them. And maybe if we put a deadline on and say to them, hey, this is how far this goes. If you want assistance, you need to go ahead and apply now so that we can get it done. Maybe it'll spur one or two more. This almost $25,000 that the county has spent is as wise and appropriate use of funds as really anything that we've done since I've been around. It keeps a bad situation from becoming a catastrophic situation. But it's time to close it out.
When we closed out the initial offer for the first round of people who were moving out at $1,000 each, I seem to remember making a motion to set a date and then also to ask that Carla and her staff reach out one more time to send that last letter and that maybe the last phone call just so we can really, you know, see that we've reached people. So I will make a motion, okay, that we set the sunset of the program of assistance that we offered here on this latest round of the maximum of $3,000 each, sunset on June 15th, and that the community services staff reach out one more time via letter and if there's a telephone or an email contact to make them aware that we need an application in and see if she gets any responses. Oh, sorry, there's the end of my motion, okay, period, after application. Okay.
I would high point that and second it.
Yeah, so we've got a motion that we're going to have a June 15th deadline. Carla and her staff are going to reach out to everybody still eligible for funds one last time and let them know of that deadline. That's, get it?
That gets it.
Okay. Further discussion?
I just didn't want to, now that I finished my thought. Please come back to us. If it turns out those two people, I think you said there were two people who haven't found a place to live yet, if they indicate to you that there's a possibility of, you know, finalizing something after June 15th, and I guess we could look at it then. But, you know, that's my only concern. I don't want to cut those two people off, but they've got to, they at some point have to be there. So June 15th for the motion right now.
Yeah, we're giving them all those 2 months' notice.
Yeah. So, okay.
Right.
That's right. Just my comment.
Absolutely. Perfect. Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Thanks, Carla.
Thank
now
you.
Let's go right into your report.
You bet. Okay, so my report is covering from January to March 2018. For general assistance, single household cases, we assisted 19. For family household cases, we assisted 12 for a total of 31. Year to date is 49 single and 58 family households for a total of 107. Denials, we had 195 this quarter, and year to date is 687. Applied but did not return, a number of 4 individuals or applications for a total of 23 for the year. Primary types of assistance with rent, we expended $9,037.77. Utilities was $615.58. Miscellaneous, which includes medications, transportation, or burial. I would say the bulk of this is going to be burial with some transportation in there. That was $11,667.50. On the Crestview relocation assistance, the numbers I put in here, 6 household cases, that's actually that we expended dollars on 6 different claims. So it's not looking at actual persons.
Mm-hmm.
Family with these 8 different claims, total amount expended was the $2,080.60. Total for the year, that is a little bit lower than what I had in my report because we did have some that we expended in April. That's just not included in there.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't had any SSI interim individuals and no substance abuse claims for the quarter. For the region, the CICS Governing Board did approve adding Greene County to the region effective July 1st of 2018. We completed our FY19 annual service and budget plan. The Governing Board approved that in March, and we have submitted that to DHS. I believe we're still waiting for notification on approval of that plan. Crisis intervention training was held in Huxley in March. We had a total of 25 participants from law enforcement, and 13 of those individuals were from law enforcement agencies within Story County. And so we had very good representation there. Patty Tribal Leeds, who heads up a lot of the training for the region, she received her certification to facilitate mental health first aid for youth. So we're be working on trying to get her out. We want to focus on the schools, trying to get her in the schools as trained staff and administrators. We did have a mental health first aid for adult training
back on March 24th. I believe the class was full for registrants, but then it ended up being a snowy day, so I think we ended up with about half of the individuals being able to attend. Another training area that we've had pre-CICS staff trained in, as well as some provider staff, is C3 de-escalation. And that training helps to identify rapid de-escalation skills. So if you're talking with somebody and they seem to be becoming agitated or upset, just gives you some helpful techniques and tips that you can use to help de-escalate that situation. We already have trained our service coordinators with that technique, and then we're looking to roll that out to our administrative assistant staff. I'm looking to attend it, have all of our directors attend. And we'd like to make it available to other county departments, providers, anybody that would be interested in it. So it's something that I will share more information with Alyssa and Noelle on, see if there's interest there. A mobile crisis response team services with IRLY Ball. That service has launched in 4 counties in our region, Warren, Madison, Powysheep, and Jasper. They're working on getting fully staffed up in order to launch to the rest of the counties in our region. The counties that it is operating in, I am hearing that it's being utilized, and there's been positive results from the service. Look forward to getting that.
And you were in a meeting with Ames PD on bringing it to Story County, is that right?
We've had discussions with them, yeah, and IRLY Ball had reached out to them a couple weeks ago and talked about the service, and we're going to be meeting again to talk about it.
When does IRLY Ball think that they will be able to bring it up in Story County?
I'm not sure. I think it's soon, but I don't have a definitive date on when they think that it will get here.
I was presenting with Cynthia, right, IRLY Ball's director, and she seemed to think that by the first of the fiscal year, they'll be operational in Story County.
Oh, okay. You can tell us more about the presentation, but thanks. Okay. Thanks.
All right. You bet. And then another initiative that we're working on is looking to add transitional living centers, one in each Boone and Marshall County. So we did let an RFP in January. That date is closed now, so we're working through those proposals with looking for services to start no later than July of 18. As far as community services, I talked about the mobile home park. So I won't go through that information there. We continue to be involved with the opioid task force and the Two Rivers Regional Committee that is developing coordinated entry for shelter care. We had staff that participated in a mental health fair that the Roland Story Schools held in March. I went to that, and it was a great opportunity to just talk with lots of parents. We had some students come through. I would say it was very well attended. So I'm hoping as we learn of other schools doing this, that we'll be able to get out to those schools as well. Aaron Reworks had 80 interviews with veterans. And then we also hired Tyler Lennon in March.
Outstanding.
So he's doing a great job getting trained with Tracy over in the field.
Good. Question for Carla.
Governor Bell has just recently signed a bill on youth mental health. Probably a task group or what? Did you explain that?
Yeah, I just got this morning that she signed an executive order creating a children's system state board, referred to as children's board. I'm going to be looking at the children's mental health system, or creating a children's mental health system. Mm-hmm. Let's see where that goes.
Super. Other questions? Carl, thank you.
Thank you.
No other reports. Public forum 2, number 2, opportunity for members of the public to comment on anything you'd like to comment on. If you'd like to comment, please come up to the microphone. Seeing no one moved to the microphone, liaison assignment is Marty.
Carl and I will be dealing with our region mental health here on Thursday, and I look forward to seeing where we're progressing on some of the initiatives you just heard about. And EDC here in town will be welcoming its new director, John Hall, and its new confederation with the ADC as of tomorrow morning. and I think we are on the threshold of some great things. We have some issues moving through Collins, Cambridge, Zering, and Nevada that I think will bear fruit in the future, and just stay tuned. I would like, again, to reflect on the fact that Dave, too, and I mentioned it earlier, but Dave is one of those guys, he had such standing in the rural community when a drainage tile was a bone of contention as far as whose it was, what needed done, and whatnot. When Dave showed up, Dave looked at it, that was it. He rendered up judgment, and nobody argued after that. That's what it was going to be. We were going to miss that because I was just talking to Darren yesterday in his office. He said they made an offer to a gentleman that they thought was going to be the heir apparent. He said, no, they might have to go outside the county to get that. Mm-hmm. And lastly, Cambridge is acting as on a follow-up basis as what I was talking about last week in moving for a little bit of downtown economic revitalization as they had a successful initial meeting with the developer. And there might be some good news in that sense. So stay tuned.
Doris.
Okay. The Central Iowa Regional Housing Authority had its annual meeting last Tuesday. And the notes I took away from it, or the key, is they have over $1 million operating reserve plus another $1 million in the bank accounts that are just kind of sitting there, okay? So I did ask the auditor was on the phone, and I did ask the auditor if that was normal. And actually, the typical operating reserve for an agency of this size, because this is an auditor who does regional housing authorities throughout the Midwest, is only about $300,000. So moving forward on that, I think Vanessa and I will have a conversation or two about what might happen, you know, with the board and the money. Of course, there is concerns what will happen at the federal level. So, I mean, you know, the board is being conservative with this money. But also, the audit did find a capital expenditure for $29,000 that was not authorized by the board. It was a substitute for a similar project, so the money was available there, and that was good because by the time the board found out about it, it already was spent and the project was done. But that's something I think that maybe a little more oversight over the board, or a little more participation, either, you know, maybe from Vanessa or me definitely going with Vanessa, is not available there. Vanessa still is looking at a retirement, okay, possibly by the end of the year. They keep on, the city keeps on asking her to stay a little longer, okay, it's very valuable, but we have discussed how we want to set this up for a possible return as far as the county being the initial representative. So there will be a motion on the consent agenda next week just for the board to appoint me as the what is called the commission representative. So I'll stay as the alternate for Ames, and Ames has the executive committee position right now, and that's the one that you go every month and actually will be controlling some of this. But this commissioner one is once a year meeting. It is vacant right now, but we have been told we should make a separate motion to put me into it so that there's a clear kind of line when Vanessa leaves. So those are the highlights there. So it'll be on the it's just a motion. Okay. Aging Resources met, nothing really big out of there. And a report, they're still struggling with operating with 11 fewer staff. Okay. So I met with Alyssa and Barb yesterday to discuss the quote we got about upgrading our system. I will comment on the projector. I found out during that meeting yesterday that the projector really is on its last legs, and it's not the bulb. In fact, we have the last bulb that was available last time they had to replace it. That came from China, and it came with no guarantee it would even work. So, and it's actually the color wheels in the projector that are off or being stuck or something. So it needs to go. But the quote that we went over and looked at, and now are going to, I believe Barb is going to put something together that would be before us, hopefully maybe on the May 8th agenda or the end of May agenda, that we want to just list what kind of equipment is available and what capacity that would yield,
And then so we, the three members of the board, can say, yes, this is the direction we want to go. Okay? So that's pretty much for that. Went to the Nevada City Council meeting last night. And the Stover Bail research that has come out of ISU and DuPont and that has been Ray Reynolds,
yes.
Okay, has been participating in, it turns out that has now set the bail size and weight standards, and it is now included in the International Fire Code. So this research has done something very significant. Now I guess we need for industry to catch up with kind of the research that has been done, but in the future this should help reduce the Stover Bail fire. This week I'll be at the Beyond the Bus Symposium tomorrow. There's a hazard mitigation plan meeting that I'm hoping to make. There's a HERDA meeting. There's going to be the ADC board, since that one on Friday morning still, right? And hopefully to make the legislative end of the session reception for the Story County legislators, assuming that in another 7 days they're done.
Yes.
Okay.
Let's see, for you, I understand that Perry Way has been referred to law enforcement now, and there is an investigation going on. So
thank
I think
you.
That you have
appreciate
heard that.
No, okay.
You mentioned Vanessa. She invited me to speak on behalf of Story County yesterday at the Fair Housing 50th year celebration. So that was I was glad to represent us there. Nice march from Brookside to City Hall, and then some nice speeches. Austin did a good job not falling over backwards while he was walking, taking pictures. You mentioned the Stover Bales. I met last week with all the landowners who own the ground that are almost a million Stover Bales are sitting on, and just talking about what ultimately is going to happen with those. No good answers right now. And then you wanted to know about a class that Lisa Edmond and I speak at every year. It's called the Graduate School Leadership Cohort, and it's just a bunch of finishing up PhD students. Lisa and I go every year along with others, and this year we had Irie Ball and the Emergency Residence Project along with us, and just talk about leadership in the public sphere. And it's an energizing class, and I always enjoy being with Representative Edmonds and talking those things through. Questions or comments? If not, I take a motion.
Oh. Just want to let you know, Ray Reynolds said last night also that it turns out he got a note or something yesterday, I believe, that the Stover Bales, they may have a buyer for them. Since you mentioned the owner's land, so okay, but you're smiling as if you don't.
Well, we don't need to spend a lot of time on this, but the problem with the Stover Bales is they really have limited value at this point. Their value is not worth enough to move them. Each one of those is roughly 3/4 of a ton. Each Stover Bale is roughly 3/4 of a ton, and the tipping fee at our local landfills are between $52 and $60 per ton. So if you start adding just under a million bales by $50 or $60 per tip, you see the problem we're in. You can talk about using them for cattle feed, but the edges of what we have, and remember, some of this came out of the field in 2012. That stuff is really degraded to the point that some of those bales are unmovable. The newer stuff, the stuff that came out in 2015, which would be the newest, there's probably some components of that that could be used for cattle feed, but the question for us is how you get to it. So that's basically going to be the center of one of those piles. So how are you going to get to the center of one of those piles? Some of these are just held up, or it appears, are held up by the tarps that are on it. If you drive the county and take a look at it, many of these bales are sloughing off to the side, and there's real concern that if you cut the strap on the tarp, what's going to happen with those? I just told you each one of those weighs roughly 3/4 of a ton. Composting them? Yeah, you could compost them, but do you know how they do that, Laura? So they'll get up there, they'll cut the tarps off, and they'll spread hog manure repeatedly over the top of those. And over the course of 4 or 5 years, you would hope it would disintegrate to the point that you've got some compost. The final problem that we have is the twine that they use, and when I say twine, don't think of the biodegradable string. This is metallic, hardcore, never deteriorates kind of twine tying these bales together, because the whole goal was to have one of these bales and have it stay together till it gets to the plant. Well, now the goal is to get rid of them, but some people are saying, well, we'll just come in and we'll grind up the bales. There's two issues with that. Grind up the bales, and then you can spread it back on your field and get some kind of nutrient out of that. The problem is if they have a grinder that can handle the twine, now you're going to end up with little pieces of twine that will never degrade in your field, and the farmers will not be fired up by that. The second one is, you use, and I'm oversimplifying, but you use a basic fork that sticks these bales to move them around, right? Take them from the truck and put them on a thing, and occasionally these forks will break off inside the bale. Well, normally what you do is a fork breaks off, you stop what you're doing, you pull, you find a way to dig into whatever bale it broke off and you get it off. Well, DuPont made a strategic decision that that was an inefficient use of their time, so these things would break. And DuPont said, well, we'll just move it to the plant. We've got a big magnet at the plant, so when these bales come through, we'll know which ones have the fork pieces in them, and we'll deal with that bale. Well, if they're sitting out in the middle of nowhere, so now let's say, Lord, you bring a big grinder on site at one of these places, and you want to grind these bales. How are you ever going to know which one of them has one of these big metal forks in it, and what do you think that'll do to a grinder? So, pretty long-winded answer to say there's nothing easy about dealing with these, you know, 700,000 to a million bales that are scattered around central Iowa right now.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay. Any other questions before we adjourn? And if not, I'd take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Adjourn. Thank you.